I'm Russ White for MSU Today. Lori Strom is Lifespan and Family Services Coordinator at the MSU Work Life Office at worklife.msu.edu. She presented a session titled Surviving and Thriving as an Elder Caregiver at the Broad College of Business Executive Development Program's Business and Bagels series. Strom's talk addressed the wellness concerns of working caregivers and their elder loved ones. The presentation explored caregivers' needs for healthy living and resources to balance their work, life, and caregiving responsibilities.
When we look at child care needs or young children, there's consistency usually about when children are developing normally, what kind of services they need as a young child. But for elders, every situation is unique and special because of the ages of the elder themselves, their diagnosis, their relationship, if there's a spouse or not, do they live long distance, are they in the same community, what are the siblings' personalities like, and their desires to help and provide care for the elders. So there's so many family dynamics that come into play that it's unique every time you talk to a family.
Strom says that caring for an elder loved one can often impact the caregiver's own health.
Well, usually, as I say, crisis occurs, a fall, a broken hip, a stroke, a heart attack, and then mom's going to come and live with me, and I'm not prepared for that. Even mom living in her own home where I have to go there daily to cook meals and clean and provide them with the care they need. So as that daily routine goes on and on and on for perhaps 5 years being the average, and I'm working full-time, I have my own family to raise, it just really becomes a stressor. And you don't want to say burden because it really is a privilege to have that opportunity to spend that quality time with them. But it's a day-to-day routine that is the work of multiple people. And as I say, when someone's in a skilled nursing facility, they have three shifts of people providing the care. And that's the 24 hours in the day. And one sibling or a child can't be expected to provide 24-hour care when they have their own lives to live. And often someone will suffer their own stroke or heart attack because of the stressors of the caregiving.
So it's important for caregivers to take care of their own health.
Self-care in every regard, whether you're a caregiver or just in society today, we have a lot of stressors. And one of the dynamics that's different in our society is that women are now working since the 1970s or so, and that makes a family stretched with trying to provide care for the kids, getting them to their doctor's appointments and their activities and social sports and scouts and music and everything they do. And so if you add elder parents on top of that, people are just overly stretched and stressed. So it's important for our well-being to practice meditation or yoga or exercise, have time carved out in a day or in a week that's our special time so that we don't lose who we are and we maintain the best health possible. Because if something happens to me, who will care for my elder parent? And we see that they're the ones that often will get sick first because they're providing good care for the parent who could be more well.
There can be financial costs to caring for an elder loved one, and caring for that special person can impact one's own income, often in the form of lost wages.
The societal cost, which is they estimate $3 trillion in lost wages and Social Security benefits, the fact that 34% of people are having to work less, 39% leave their jobs. Today, a woman just told me that she's thinking she has to quit her job to be able to provide the care for her parents. So if people have to quit their jobs early or reduce their work hours, they're losing income. That, again, is an impact on the economy. They're not purchasing what goods they would have. And then losing that Social Security benefit is a problem for them as they age. And so I encourage people to think about caring for themselves as well to prepare for this event, because we're living longer and the costs are going up.
And Strom cautions that it's important for elder caregivers to guard against becoming frustrated with mom or dad.
It's very scary, but the research shows that the majority of elder abusers are family members. And as I spoke today, we may start out well-meaning in that we want to provide love and good care for our person. But over time, the stress may agitate us, and we get resentful, and we can sometimes act out our anger and frustration on our elder because they're frail and vulnerable. And then financially, people are often abusive. Well, I'm doing all this hard work caring for my mom. I'm not getting paid, so it's okay for me to take some money out of her checkbook. You know, they justify it in that they're not paid caregivers, and so mom wouldn't care if I take this money. And sometimes it snowballs and can be excessive, and people can really abuse their parents financially.
And again, Lori Strom emphasizes the importance of taking care of yourself as you're taking care of a loved one.
Ideally, we'd all want to be pampered. I want to come home and have dinner on the table for me every night after work. I want somebody to nurture and take care of me. But that's not realistic in that here we're working so hard to take care of everybody else, our parents, our children, our coworkers, our spouses and partners, our pets, whomever we're responsible for. But it feels often that there's nobody to take care of us individually. And so we must do that for ourselves. That's the self-care is so important that if we think about the fact that there's no one we can really depend on, even though we have our own family and we have partners and spouses, but we just need to take care of ourselves, and then we'll all be better off because then I'll be healthier and I'll be a better caregiver. It's the basic stuff we hear every day. It's nothing new, but just to reiterate how important sleep is, how important good nutrition is, and the exercise. And it doesn't have to be a formal program, but just moving. Just getting out and walking, getting up from your desk once an hour or so, walking the long distance in the parking lot and not taking the elevators. Those little things can help. And just getting out and getting fresh air. I'm a big proponent of nature.
In her presentation, Lori Strom suggests an elder caregiver should strive for excellence, not perfection.
Yeah, that's on one of our coping with stress tips. And that's been a motto that I've always lived by. I consider myself high caliber in the work that I do, and I always strive to do the best that I can in any situation, whether it's my relationships with my family or my friends or coworkers or the work that I do in my job or at home. But if it's not perfect, I'm okay with that. And I have learned to let that go. And I know people who are perfectionists, and it can be very stressful. And I just think that we all do the best we can, and we're all working really hard. And if it's not perfect, that's okay. And we have to give ourselves that.
So be sure to carve out time in your schedule for activities you enjoy that replenish you.
Exactly. What are your hobbies and interests that you loved when you were younger, that you celebrated, and that's who you were, your identity and your core values? What have you given up that you really love and enjoy that you just don't have time for? I say seize the day and seize the hour, the minutes, whatever it takes. Read that book, take that walk, see those friends, go out for coffee, go bowling, exercise, go to church, do your crafts, sewing, whatever it is. Just make sure that you make time for yourself to do that, because that's what you'll miss.
Elder caregivers need to come to terms with the fact that you're often not caring for the same person who raised you.
Well, as someone ages, especially when someone has dementia, it's more prevalent with the dementia that you might not even be recognized by your parent as your child. They might call you the name of their own sister or brother because of family resemblance. Your parent doesn't remember you as an adult, but just as a child. And so dementia can be a very hard thing for families because it takes away those old relationships, because they don't act like a parent anymore, because you have to act like their parent in providing them safety and security and the care that they need. And it's sad because people work so hard and they can't help but cry through the grief of, I'm working so hard for my mom, but she doesn't even know that I'm her daughter. She calls me by a different name, or she doesn't recognize me at all. And it's heartbreaking. It really is sad. And so that creates more strain on people. And so if they just try to seize the relationship in a way of enjoying every moment and knowing that this could be the last moment we have together, we didn't really talk about it today. I ran out of time. But knowing that this is a special relationship, and when I look back on it, I don't want to have any regrets. When my mom is gone, I don't want to say, I wish I had said this, I wish I would have done that. But if you try to maintain that family relationship to the best of your ability, say the things you need to say that are loving and caring and reminiscing, You know, those are the good times you'll remember, and you won't have regrets. You did everything you could.
When mom or dad begins to need help, Strom says it's important to gather everyone together for a family meeting.
Often when you have siblings, and even if they live in different areas of the country, they have different experiences with how well mom's doing. Well, when I talk to her, she's really good. You know, she's very alert and happy, and everything's hunky-dory. But you see that the sibling who visits her regularly, who sees the house is not being kept up, the food in the refrigerator is going bad, she's really not bathing, and the hygiene is poor. Those are conflicting experiences. And so when it comes to making decisions about where mom should be, where is she most safe, staying at home with in-home care, going to a day program, or moving into a facility, how do we come together to make that decision on her behalf that we all agree? And when we have different experiences, it creates conflict sometimes. Or the money might be a factor where, you know, I want to spend my mother's inheritance now and not let her use it for her own care. And some people can be cruel, and then there's others who are very, you know, giving and loving. So it's about coming together as a family to make those proper decisions on the parent's behalf, hoping that the parent can also be part of the conversation. And I emphasize that they don't make any promises that we're not going to send you to a nursing home, but just promise we want to provide you with the best care possible. Your quality of life matters to us. You still are able to do this, this, and that, and these are your strengths, and we want to build upon that. And maybe just move one time so it's easier on everybody. And then we can all make a decision to sell the house or whatever needs to be done. And that's why the durable powers of attorney are so important for both the health care decisions and the financial decisions.
There are options beyond just staying at home or fully moving into a nursing home environment, like adult daycare or in-home help. When the time comes, try to move mom or dad just once, advises Strom.
Right, and that's where in my work, when I consult with families, I like to make sure they're aware of the options, because nobody becomes an expert until you live this, and most people are unaware of what's out there as far as services, because the resources can really make a difference for people to be able to cope and provide that best care possible. So if they know that ideally, we want mom to live at home because that's what she wants, but to enable her to be there safely, we need to bring in some home services where people can help with cleaning and buying groceries and cooking meals and making sure she's bathing, she's got her medications, and that she's getting some exercise, and then perhaps participating in a day program so that she gets dressed and gets out and socializes and has a place to go and a reason to get up in the morning and to have a purposeful life. Then she can do that. But then as she declines, maybe we'll need some other kind of residential care, but not a nursing home. And nursing homes can be very expensive. And people, and we didn't even talk about this today, but people are unaware that Medicaid will only pay for nursing homes, not assisted living or other kinds of residential care. But to qualify for Medicaid, you have to be quite indigent, and you can only have $2,000 in assets. And so people will spend down all of their assets to be able to qualify for a nursing home. But that may not be necessary if their medical needs don't require that. But one of the unknown facilities is called adult foster care. And people think foster care as in child foster care. But it's really a neighborhood facility that is licensed by the state. And they can have as few as 2 or 3 people to as many as 20. And they're licensed for that number of care providers, and they can age in place in that this can be a place where they can help cook meals, they've got the dog living there, they can work in the garden, they can help fold the laundry. So it's a homey environment and a homey neighborhood setting, and if they are progressing in their disease process, hospice can be brought in, and so they can receive end-of-life care while they live in adult foster care homes. And it tends to be less expensive than the fancy high-rise assisted living units that don't provide care. You have to pay extra. That's a la carte. So you're just paying for the room and board, basically. And if you need care services, then you have to pay extra. So adult foster care home can have all of it in place, and you don't have to move again. And it's an unknown kind of facility, and there are neighborhoods everywhere, and you may not even know it.
In her presentation, Lori Strom from MSU's Work-Life Office uses the term continuum of care.
Well, the continuum of care can be in one place, or it can be a use of services in that, for instance, here in our community, the Bertram Hills Retirement Center is a continuum of care facility, which was one of the first. It was built in the 70s, and so you can live independently in their cluster homes outside and drive your car and be totally independent. If you want to go into the building for meals, you can, or other services. They also have independent apartments, and then they have an assisted living, which is a memory care unit, so it's a step down where they have their own dining room and their own services. And then if you are really declining and you need nursing care, you go into the health center, which is their skilled nursing facility, the nursing home. So you have all those levels of care in the one building, and so you don't have to move away. The other way of looking at continuum of care is I'm living in my own home. I'd prefer to stay there, but to keep me there, I'm going to bring in services to my house. I'm also going to attend a day program a few days a week to get me physically active and mentally stimulated and socialized. And so by being active, it keeps me healthier to enable me to live at home longer. And then as I progress, I may need to move into another facility where I live where I can get 24-hour care.
If and when it comes time to seek a nursing home or assisted living environment for a loved one, Strom advises against focusing too much on the setting's amenities. It's the staff that's key.
The staff make the difference. And having worked in these facilities, I know people are in it because they can't find another job. It's a place where they can be trained and they can get a decent wage, but they don't really have the heart for it. It takes a special person to do this work. To me, it's very rewarding. I love working with the seniors and forged some real close friendships with the people that I worked with. You know, these 80 and 90-year-olds whose families had abandoned them, but we just hit it off really well, and I respected them, and we really would have a good time when I worked in those facilities.
We're going to need more and more elder caregivers in the future, so it's important that we interest more young people in the profession. And we need to make the profession more attractive to job seekers.
Exactly. And so there's the people that don't really want to be there, and then there are people that are really cut out for the job and enthusiastic and loving and nurturing. But it's hard to find people to want to pursue that career. And what I learned was that by 2020 in Michigan alone, we need 30,000 direct care workers who are the paid caregiving workforce who work in these facilities. And it's just really hard to entice young people to want to get into this field because our society is so youth-oriented and ageist that they don't think that that would be a fun job. Nor are the wages competitive, and that's a real problem. It's just like child care workers, our most precious resources, our young children and our aging people have workforces that get paid the least, and it's heartbreaking that we value them so much, but we don't pay the people well enough who provide the care for them, and that's heartbreaking. So somehow we, in the educational realm, need to find a way to entice students to want to study this field, because we need so many people. It's hard when our economy is doing well like it is now. They can find jobs in a fast food restaurant that will pay them a higher wage than what they would get working in a senior facility. And so there's no incentive for them.
Lori Strom says there are particular challenges for long-distance caregivers.
Yes, there are, because you don't really know how things are going. You talk to your parent every day, oh, everything's fine, honey, we're good. And then you come for a visit 6 weeks later and see that things aren't necessarily as well as mom had told me. And so it's that unknowing how they really are doing. It's trying to gather people, maybe the neighbors, maybe their friends, maybe the church people, to try and rally a group of a support system who can visit on a regular basis and maybe set them up on a schedule so that I know Tuesday's Bertha's going to come, Wednesday George is going to come, and so that they have regular attention. And then trying to find the services. Like I said, it's a full-time job providing this care, and when you have to search for the services and vet the people that come into the home and paying the bills, and it's hard doing it when you're in your local community. It's even that more challenging when they're far away. And a lot of families will decide, I'm just going to move mom here with me. because it's just easier for me, or because my siblings, often it's where are the siblings located, and who's in the majority and who's the closest and what the best location is. And for some, it's devastating to have to move from their community because they do have the local store or the local church or the friends or the neighbors. But if they're totally isolated and they can't get out and they don't see any, it doesn't matter where they live really, if they're just in a building all day long, then they can move to where their family lives to make it easier on the family.
When caring for an elder loved one, Strom advises that you focus on what mom or dad can do, not what they can't do anymore.
Yeah, look at their strengths, because it's so easy for us to say, well, she doesn't know who I am because of her dementia, but she's still very physically active. Often they're very strong physically. So she can still help with some tasks, and we can still get her physically up and active. And she might be able to help in the garden or help prepare meals. And because what you'll see is when the decline happens, it's like, oh, I thought she was bad before, but now look. So it's about celebrating the strengths and working with them on what they still can do and avoid what the deficits are, because it can be depressing too. I remember my mom when she was so functional and she did all this stuff, and that's my memory that I'll have of growing up. But knowing that today, this is the best we're going to get, and I'm appreciating her for what she is.
And it's important to recognize and develop your own caregiving style.
Just as our parenting styles, some are more permissive, some are more disciplinarian. And so often you'll see, and often it's the frustration, but a child might say, Mom, come on, we got to go do this. You know, your doctor's appointment, and we got to get you up and dressed and bathed, and you better eat your food, and almost becoming like a parent, whereas others are, okay, whatever you want, Dad, you know, I'm not going to force you, because they want to be respectful. But sometimes they might become so permissive or passive that then they let the father roll over them, and he's not going to do anything. And then it becomes problematic for his own health and well-being and quality of life. So there's got to be a balance there between not being too authoritarian, but not making decisions that are smart. You know, we don't want to compare elders to children, but some of the dynamics are similar. And so sometimes you just have to take charge because you know what needs to be done for their health and safety.
Lori has these suggestions for those beginning their elder caregiving.
Well, in the United States, the Elder Care Locator is, there's a website and there's also a 1-800 number. The Elder Care Locator will help people. My mom lives in Florida. I can call that county agency on aging and ask, do you have a Meals on Wheels program? Do you have access to adult day programming? Are there transportation opportunities? Do you have people that can help my mom with her taxes? There's all kinds of services that each community provides. The Older Americans Act funds each state, and each state then divides itself up into areas on aging. And here we have the Tri-County Office on Aging, which is Ingham, Eaton, and Clinton counties, whereas our whole Upper Peninsula is its own area agency on aging. It's usually geographic-based and population-based. So they may offer different services in each one, but if you get to know them and always search their websites to see what services they offer, and there may be financial support for someone who's low income to attend a day program. They might be able to help fund that. They might be able to help fund transportation and the Meals on Wheels. So it's really about doing your homework to find out what services are provided in that local community.
Lori Strom's overall advice for elder caregivers?
Well, always come from your heart. Do what's best for the individuals, knowing that it's going to be challenging, but being sure to take care of yourself and ask for help. I think some of the things we didn't have time to mention today is that we all have a sense of pride and obligation, and it's my parent and they raised me and I'm going to do the best I can to take care of them. Some people think that that means no one can help me because I have to do it my way and it's my obligation to give back to my parent. Whereas if you accept the help and you know that you deserve a break too, the word respite is important, that people take the break that they need, because then they can come back to it fresh and they're not going to end up with a heart attack or a stroke through the stress. But taking care of yourself, being willing to ask for help, and using the resources that are available, because if you're not aware of what resources are available, you're not going to know where to go. but just understanding that most communities have some sort of services that are available. Not every community. Rural communities suffer, but generally there is some support, and it may just be in a service club like the Kiwanis or the Lions Club, or it might be through the churches. So non-traditional kinds of support services may also be out there to help. And don't be afraid to ask friends and family and neighbors to help as well.
That's Lori Strom, Lifespan and Family Services Coordinator at the MSU Work-Life Office. Learn more at worklife.msu.edu. I'm Russ White for MSU Today.